personal favor, son?
Sure.
Don't ever play me like a flute. Okay? Because you see, you two idiots got real lucky. I don't have enough to keep you here. But mark my words, gentlemen, you're going down. I mean, you're either going down, or by God, I'm gonna take you down. But either way, once you're down, you'll stay down! You'll stay down! You will stay down! Now get up and get out! Get up, get out, 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 get up, get out!
Get up and go, get up and go!
Don't touch my door!
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Excuse me, good timing for that. Radio St. Pete, hello. It's the Homemade Broadcast with your host, Will Koontz. How are you? I am he. I am that person. I'm welcoming you. I hope you're doing okay. I'm well, as always. I'm exhausted. It was Hell Week. It was Judgment Week for your old pal Billy. I think I came through it with flying colors. As far as I know, at this point, right now, I did just fine and everything's good. It was a big week. We had Wednesday, we had USF at USF St. Pete. We did some live broadcasting there with Mr. Bordeaux on Wednesday at the USF St. Pete Eco Fest, which was a lot of fun. Get to talk to some young people and give them some flyers for other events that I'm going to pester them to go to. But I had a good time out there with Nathan Hart, Brian Harris, Nina Ramdet. And, of course, James Bailey was out there telling some jokes. As far as I know, it went okay. So very proud of those people, and I thank them very much for doing that. Also, of course, Friday was we're still here at the Creative Loafing Space. Oh, my, was it a good show. As far as I know, again, at this point, it could not have gone any better. It was tremendous. It was a great crowd. Thank you very much to all the comics, Law Smith, Matt Fernandez, JB Ball, Cam Bertrand, Mona Smith, Chorizo. Who else am I forgetting here? Oh gosh, come on. It's a long week, folks. Natasha Samrani. Oh boy. There's a couple others. Kyle Roos. And who am I forgetting? Or somebody I'm forgetting, I'm sorry. But it was really fun, great show, and looking forward to doing more of those events. Thank you to everybody, to the media outlets that actually helped promote this. Thank you very much to The Bone and A Cat Named Mo and Johnny B for having me on. That was a lot of fun to talk to those guys. Really cool dudes. Fisher and Cage, thank you guys very much for supporting it. And of course, That's So Tampa put out an article this week. Appreciate those folks. Them and I Love the Burg have been really good to us supporting the comedy events, and really thrilled that people are finally starting to take notice of this area and what it has to offer, because it has a lot to offer. And that was one of the things I said to That's So Tampa, is that basically what I wanted out of this event was I just want to give a kick and, you know, a little kick in the keister to the Tampa Bay local media here, because look, I'm sure they need things to write about. It's not like you can cover music every day or the art every day. You got to have some other things, some other mixtures. People are lazy. They don't go search things out for themselves. They like to have it pre-planned and packaged. So if you throw it in their face, you know, a little bone here and there could really help this comedy scene out. So was really glad. Hopefully that'll happen now. I think so. So we got the next open mic coming up this Tuesday. That's the 28th of April, of course, at Sly Bar. And this podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar. Find out why I Love the Berg has named Sly Bar one of the top 10 businesses to watch in 2015. You got great events happening there. They got a music open night, of course, the comedy open mics, Cards Against Humanity tournaments. They do bike ride events. It's endless. Got a great staff there. Joe and Lauren run a mean bar, so make sure you check them out, facebook.com/slybarstpete, and they're located at 2061 Central Avenue. Go have a beer. Tell them Will sent you, and they will roll their eyes, probably. Or maybe you'll get a free beer out of it. I don't know. I've never tried this before, so who knows? Just ask for a free beer. Be like, hey, Will said that he would just put it on Will's tab, and he'll get it, and see what they say. They probably will do that for you. Please don't do that, though, because I'm also don't have any money. So don't do that. But go in and say hello to them, regardless. So coming up this week on Homemade Broadcast 85, we got a young lady who took down the $50 at the last open mic. Her name is Nora Nagatani. She's a friend. I met her through a friend. And I think she's based in LA, I'm pretty sure, and she's visiting here temporarily. She's originally from the area, and now she's visiting. So she should be here any minute, and I'm going to find out all these good things about this new person, and maybe even a new friend. Maybe by the end of this, I'll be able to call Nora a new friend of mine. So through the magic of radio, please hold a minute, and we'll be right back with Nora Nagatani. Nora.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi, Will.
It's good to talk to you. You came to the last open mic, took down the money, I heard, and I was talking to Mike, who hosted the show that night. He's like, I'd never heard of her before, but she was great. And everyone was kind of like, where did she come from?
Well, thank you for having me. My friend Tiffany, I guess she's our mutual friend, just told me they were doing an open mic for cash, so I just went. I wanted to get back in the scene anyway, so this was my first Florida stand-up. I started in Los Angeles about a year and a half ago.
You started comedy, doing comedy a year and a half ago?
No, stand-up. I've been doing comedy for a while, like sketch writing and acting in sketches and stuff like that. My BFAs, I have my BFA from FSU in acting. But I've always kind of leaned towards comedy aspect of that.
So it's kind of stand-up's kind of a new thing. You said a year, and you started out in LA, which I guess is a good place to start because that's kind of where I guess comedy lives, right?
Yeah, I mean it's very intimidating because there's so much talent out there, as there is here. It's just a little more concentrated in one area in Los Angeles, obviously. And, you know, there's people that do that strictly for a living. So there's a lot of competition. But, yeah, it was fun to do some comedy here and see, like, the local comics.
That was the thing with this Creative Loafing show, and that was the main thing I wanted, because the reason this happened was because the media doesn't pay any attention to the comedians, and Creative Loafing was an easy target because they're kind of the ones I think of, like, especially with local stuff, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that would cover local stuff. There's a TBT, but there's a lot of different things. I mean, the Chicago Tribune will cover the stand-up scene there. Understandably, it's a little different because it's such a large city.
Mm-hmm.
But they still, the Chicago Tribune, which is a huge paper, you know, has a section dedicated towards it. And there's just nothing around here that they don't promote it at all. So from this event, I'm hoping to kind of give them a kick in the butt and show what there is, who is here, because there's a lot of really good comics. I wish I could have made this list tripled, but you know, we can't go 6 hours at a comedy event.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was good to see. And I know L.A. is kind of the place to be, L.A. or New York. I feel like that maybe starting there, you would benefit from that just because you're going into the arena. You know, it's where it lives and breathes. So mm-hmm. you don't have time to slack off. You have to go in and you know what a professional comedian looks like too, as opposed to here where you're kind of learning. So what was it a challenge to just like what made you decide like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this today on this day when you finally did it?
I had done improv before, in New York. When I was in New York, I did, UCB classes out there. And then when I moved to Los Angeles, I was doing Groundlings, and in the meantime, the classes out there are very expensive. They're like $500 per level.
Wow. How many levels are there?
There's four, and that's if you, you know, pass.
If you have to audition?
Yeah, you have to audition just to take level one. This is for Groundlings. So I finished level one, and I, in the meantime, when I was waiting, kind of just to save up money again, I wanted to do stand-up just to kind of keep my creative whatever, just keep going.
Keep your mojo flowing, yeah.
Yeah. I was very fortunate. I got lucky. I was doing production assistant work at for a Comedy Central pilot at the time that didn't get picked up, but I was friends with the people I was working for, and they let me come in. They caught wind that I wanted to try an open mic, and they let me come in. They said, come in every day with, you know, or every week with 5 new minutes or like 2 to 5 minutes, and we'll chop it down and like kind of give you feedback on what we think will work. Mm-hmm. And that was immensely helpful and, you know, just encouraging to have that kind of environment before I even step foot in an open mic and tried anything.
Yeah, that's cool to have, like, you know, that professional-esque or, well, I guess just professionals in general who get paid money to do something like that. That's kind of a reassuring factor. So you weren't going in blind. You ran it past some people. Mm-hmm. You knew it was, you knew what they thought would work. And these are professional writers, I'm assuming.
These were the production... like the producer and stuff, but they know, you know, they know comedy. And actually I did get to show it to one of the executive producers who's also a writer, and that was really cool. He sat down with me for like 30 minutes and just kind of went over, gave me tips and stuff. So I was very, very fortunate.
So how did you do your first time?
Jeez. I'm trying to. I think I did. Oh, I did it at a coffee shop that my friend worked at with a lot. I think I was the only girl there, and it was all comedians that knew each other and would just come there every week and work out their stuff. I got a few laughs, which was encouraging because she warned me ahead of time. She said they may not, you know.
Yeah, if you're in a room full of comics, they're there to
compete. You know, it's a little bit competitive. But for the most part, all of the stand-up comedians I've met have been really encouraging, and everyone's kind of in it together and supportive of one another.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So you did all right. You know, you went up, and then when you were finished, you were like, oh, all right, I'll do this again at some point. When was the second time you went ahead and tried it again? Was it... like the next day, next week, or
I think I tried to do it the next, like within the same week. I had heard there's people there because, especially in Los Angeles, if you really search out, you can go to one at least every day, if not two, you know, multiple.
Yeah, yeah.
So I tried to do it within that week, and it wasn't too long before I people, I think. Just there's people that book shows that come to the shows, and they're all bringers, though, is the thing,
right?
And that's, you know, how the business works in LA. And I even feel fortunate to be part of people's shows that are bringers, because it's a cool spot to perform at, and you know that there'll be
people
crowd.
There.
Yeah,
that's the thing is, you know, the people that I've met around here, it's hard for them to. I feel bad too, even because I put on events and I do, you know, this pop. I feel bad asking people, hey, check out what I'm doing, especially when it's every week And especially some of these people are going and performing at an open mic or even a show at least two times a week. So right, they can't be like, hey, they're like, all right, enough. You know, when I first started, my first Sly Bar open mic that I did was packed. And they're all still pretty good. You know, now it's kind of gaining traction as its own thing. But initially, you know, you try to get everybody to show up. And your friends show up for the first couple. But then they're like, all right. You know,
I've seen it.
I know. I get it. And, you know, so it's hard for them. So, I get it. It's a weird thing. I feel guilty sending even Facebook invites because I feel like I'm a pain in the ass. And I know I'm a pain in the ass. But you have to be a pain in the ass in order to try to be successful. You have to let people know what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, that's something. I totally understand where you're coming from. I try if I do get somebody to come twice in a row, and even just for myself, I do try to switch out a minute, like put a new minute at least of material in.
Yeah.
Keep it fresh, you know.
Right. That's important, and that's one thing I've noticed here is a lot of people don't do that. I've been doing this open mic almost a year now. And I've heard some people come and do the same 5 minutes for a year, which is just like, you're killing me here. And I've talked to, you know, some of the pros or you know, the semi pros around here, how do you eliminate that? I want to make it so it's available to everyone and everyone has the opportunity to do it if they want to do it. But also you run the risk of, which I've heard from audience, I'm sick of hearing the same 5 minutes, mm-hmm. which I hear you. I understand. And it seems like it's almost like a hobby. Like it's not many people take it serious. And I feel like it bogs down the ones who do take it serious.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know of a way to get around that. You know, like what could be done? I'm racking my brain trying to figure that out. But I also, it's going against what I wanted this to be, you know, I wanted this to be an open.
You want it to be inclusive without.
Yeah. Accepting and, you know, all an inclusive environment. And I'm just like, man, maybe I just have to be judgmental and like, you know, I'm like, I don't want to do this, you know, cause I don't know anything. I'm just along for the ride. Just like everybody else.
Do you do stand up as well?
I'm so busy with this podcast and promoting events. Mm-hmm. I keep a notebook and I write down things, mm-hmm. bits, and I'll get to an open mic maybe once a month. But my goal really isn't to be a stand-up comedian. I want to be doing this, you know, full-time. I think my dream job would be having comedians come in and talk for 3 hours a day and then go home and get a paycheck.
That'd be a nice gig, yeah.
Man, that would be a sweet gig. So that's really what I'm working towards. Usually if something's bothering me or something enough, then I'll go do an open mic. But, you know, I started when I was probably 18, me and my old roommate. I started hosting for those guys. And then we kind of stopped. And then when I picked up this podcast, I wanted something that I could promote the podcast with. So I started the open mic. And, you know, I like to hang out with comics. I think they're fun people all the way around. So it killed a lot of birds with one stone, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you went to... You're from the area originally?
Yes. I was born in St. Pete. I live in Seminole.
Mm-hmm.
My family lives in Seminole. I went to Seminole High. And you're from the area as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I went to Largo.
Okay. So right down the street.
Yeah. Yeah, literally.
I feel too, coming from Florida and moving to a big city, you do have an abundant amount of material, especially.
Sure. Yeah, just check out baynews9.com and you'll have a new story. I saw a story today where a guy had a cottonmouth snake on his bed in a pillow sack.
Mm-hmm.
And it got out and slithered across his chest and bit him on the lip. And I don't know how many other places that would happen, except here in Florida. It was out in Waimama.
It's from where?
Waimama,
I've never even heard of
Hillsborough County, like country Hillsborough County.
Oh, okay.
Basically, yeah.
It's a weird, yeah, that's, it's, Florida is such an odd state because you get the surfing culture on the, you know, on the coastline, mm-hmm. and then in the middle, it's pure
chaos.
Redneck.
Yeah.
It's so strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, even, I mean, I went to FSU, so even in Tallahassee, outside of Tallahassee, you wouldn't really want to be caught there late at night or, you know, it's just, it's like deliverance country.
Yeah, that is like the South. Like, I think, because I saw that story where they were going to, or there was some proposal from South Florida somewhere to cut Florida in half, and you would have North Florida and then South Florida, like, you know, North and South Dakota.
Okay.
So basically, like Miami and then up to Tampa and then across from Orlando would be South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest would be, you know, Florida. It's kind of its own thing. It's weird, the diversity in this state. The nation's largest cattle farm is in Florida, believe it or not.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't have thought that. You think Texas, right?
Yeah.
Nope. It's just somewhere in Florida just hanging out. So you graduated Seminole, and then you went to Florida State and started working on your, your goal was acting, you wanted to act.
Yes, I had a really, really great, teacher and mentor, and I still talk to her. I just had breakfast with her this week. My high school drama teacher, and I was doing musical theater and acting with her, and then from there I think I had a lot of confidence graduating from high school. I had won this competition and they gave me $10,000.
Nice.
Towards school. Yes. Yeah,
so what was that?
It was called Rockers Rising Stars. I think they still do it because they've asked me to speak for it. And this doctor gives $10,000 per category. So there's an acting category, a vocal category, a music category, and a dance category. And I went in the acting category that year, and the winner gets $10,000. So that, right off the bat, I think, kind of, you know, you feel validated when mm-hmm. you do something like that. So going into audition, even though FSU has a really competitive program, I felt kind of confident going in. And even if I didn't get it, I thought, you know, I'm still probably going to go for theater in general. They have a general theater study, and then they have the concentrated BFA acting program.
Right on. If you're just joining us, sitting down with Nora Nakatani. She's a comedian and actress working out of L.A., visiting home for a couple months. Why are you home? What brought you back home?
there's a number of things. You know, there's, without getting too, like, grim, there's family things and stuff. And ultimately, too, I felt like if I'm going to take a break, I'm going to do it now. While, you know, L.A. will still be there when I get back in September. And it felt like a good time, kind of, to spend some quality time with my family and, you know, save up and decompress a little bit. I've been doing a lot of long days, and just when I left Los Angeles, I had two jobs, so I was work pretty hard and consistently.
Are you finding, like, I saw you have an IMDb page. I did a little research today.
Oh,
so
God.
You're doing some stuff. I mean, like, have you found, I mean, you've been doing work out there and everything?
Yeah, I do a lot of mostly PA work, which isn't ideal. Like, it's not what I want to be doing ultimately, but
sure.
I'd rather be on a set and around people that are going for the same goal.
Definitely.
I took a little break from those are long days, and I'll probably, once I get back to LA, I'll probably be doing PA work again. But I did take a little break, and just working two jobs, I had more time to kind of focus on stand-up and sketch writing and stuff like that, and auditioning, than I did when I was working just one job as a production assistant.
Yeah.
It's a cool opportunity to be a production assistant. You just have to be prepared for really long days.
And yeah, it's like 20-hour days sometimes, right?
So it can be, yeah. I think, like, the longest I had, we had, like, a 17- or 18-hour day. They're long. They can get long. But if that's what you want to do...
Yeah, it's kind of... I mean, that's a natural progression. Like, there's a lot of people who are working now that were PAs for other things. That's you have to do it. It's mm-hmm. just like... It's like an internship, you know what I mean? It's just something that everybody does.
Yeah, and that's... There's no better way to kind of learn how to get around a set and know what you're doing. And it takes... I will say it takes some of the magic out of... of film and television, because you see it's the
work, the real work that goes into it. It's
yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. And then even the actors, you know, they'll come on for 5 minutes and go back in their trailer. It's not, I feel like it's people glamorize the process so much, and it's really a lot more technical.
Yeah, I think, and that's, people just don't understand really what goes into it. They just see the finished product. They don't understand, you know, that you have to shoot these things, and then they have to go to editing. Sometimes you have to put special effects into them, which can take forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so people just don't get that. They just think it's all, you know, fun and games, which I'm sure, you know, on the grand scale as far as work goes and making money, it's probably a pretty good way to make your money, better than, you know, sitting at a desk or something like that.
Yeah.
But, so you've been, are you still, what's your plan here? Are you going to be doing any work here? You're going to come to the next open mic, right?
Yeah, and actually from the show I did at Sly Bar, I had a few people approach me that are bookers in the area, so I'm doing a show, Moscato's?
Yeah,
on the 7th, and then I'll definitely be doing, like, open mics and stuff in the area, just kind of testing new material, too. I think it's a good time to do that.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, I'm still, you know, writing sketches, and I like to film stupid sketches that I write and put them on YouTube and stuff like that. I think it's, it definitely used to be more fun to before it became a business.
Yeah, well, that's the risk you run, and I definitely understand that, because once you start something for fun, and then you're kind of obligated to do it, and now it's work. It's not for fun anymore. It's not fun anymore. I struggle with even doing, you know, this podcast. Sometimes I'm like, oh God, I gotta record today.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to. I love doing this.
Yeah.
But just knowing that I have to, or mm-hmm. you know, being on a deadline, that kind of changes everything. I had a friend who loved to do, you know, stuff with us, but he stopped doing it because he's like, it's not fun anymore. I don't want to do it. But you were having fun. So it just doesn't make any sense. But I totally get what he's saying. But wouldn't you rather? You have to work. You have to do something.
Oh, yeah.
So wouldn't you rather do something that you actually kind of like or used to like? Mm-hmm. I guess you can get spoiled on it, though, just like anything else. And I guess maybe he didn't really like it, too. Maybe he did it for a while and found out that he didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Also smoked a lot of weed, too. So maybe the weed got in the way of that. I don't know.
That kind of can...
That'll happen.
Demotivate you a little bit.
Oh, man. Can it ever. I used to smoke pot, and then... I just stopped. I stopped originally because just wanted to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started getting things done. And I was like, man, I think this was... Some people can do that. But you know what? I think they're liars. I think that they say, yeah, I get stuff done. Yeah, you can live... You can stay alive and do it and go to your job. And but for creative people, I think it's bad. I don't think people should smoke pot if they're creatives.
It's kind of a toss-up, I feel like. Some people I totally, totally respect, and I think they're brilliant comedy writers and people that do stand-up smoke pot. I used to smoke pretty, pretty heavily, but it was also this very concentrated product. My buddies were developing that's
out in LA, I'm assuming. Yeah.
Which
it seems like it'd probably be big business over there.
Yeah. And it was like an oil like that you would smoke. It was like a, it had like the consistency of honey.
Oh.
And it just, it, the product was like 90% THC, and I smoked it quite a bit, like on the regular, and then I started losing my mind.
Yeah, that seems, that's crazy, because that would be have like hallucinogenic effects, I'd imagine, like being that high. Last time I took, like I said, I took a break. This was, I haven't smoked in years now. So my friend came back from Colorado, and they were like, oh, I got these Listerine strip things. That's what they, you know, they're like little sheets. So he goes, I was like, ooh, let me have one. I wanna try that. I've never had that before. And he's like, all right, now you could only take about a quarter of it because it's too much, you know, otherwise. I'm like, I got it. Don't worry, I'll be fine. So I did that. I took a quarter. But you know how you kind of lose track of time, you know, when you're smoking. So I was like, I think I kind of feel it. I'm not sure. I'm going to take another quarter. So then I took, you know, another quarter, which is half. Mm-hmm. Sat for a little while, which I thought was a long period of time. Still wasn't sure. So I said, I'm just going to go all in. So I took the other half. And this was probably a period of about a half an hour. And I thought it was a couple hours. So I was having a great time. I was watching Game of Thrones. I was stretching. Having a great time by myself, and then the paranoia kicked in out of the blue, and that voice in my head just started going off, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna go to sleep, I'll be better tomorrow. I woke up, and I was stoned for two more days afterwards, and then I said, you know what, I think I'm just gonna hang this up for now. I can't handle this in my life, so maybe... I'm definitely not opposed to it. I definitely get why people smoke marijuana. And I think a lot of people should smoke marijuana, frankly. It's
in
not
moderation.
For me right now.
Yeah, and it's not for everyone, certainly.
That's true, yeah. And I think especially for creative folks, I think they say that it makes you more creative. And I think it can. Like you said, if you use it in spurts, in moderation, it can.
Mm-hmm.
But I know everyday smokers that they say that they're just fine. They handle their biz, which they do, but they're really just drugging themselves and dumbing themselves down.
Yeah.
It's, you have to feel that. You have to feel life. You have to feel it pushed down on you to really... 'cause that's what happened with me. I was like, I gotta get out of here. I can't live my life the way I'm living it anymore. It made me too comfortable, so it made me strive to do something better. And with the pot, I was just too comfortable.
Yeah, you never want to be in that space if you're, you know, an artist in any way. Being comfortable is, like, the worst.
Yeah, it's a killer.
You should always feel uncomfortable.
Absolutely, and I like feeling uncomfortable. Feeling uncomfortable is normal to me now.
Yeah, because how else are you going to, you know, grow or challenge yourself in any, you know?
I look forward to it. I hope I'm never too comfortable.
Yeah.
Because it's only going to stipen. Stifle. Is that the right word? Stifen?
Stifle.
I have an English degree, by the way. I should know these things. This is terrible. If you're just joining us, sitting down with Nora Nagatani, she is a comedian and actor working in L.A., visiting for the next few months in town. So she'll be performing at Moscato's. When did you say?
May 7th.
May 7th at Moscato's. Is that Chris that runs that room?
His name's Colton.
Oh, Colton, okay.
I need to contact the other... People gave me their business cards, and I need to follow through with that.
Yeah, comedy's blowing up down here. I like to take... I'm going to take 51% of the credit for that. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm going to go ahead and take that credit and run with it. she just nodded her head. So, okay, good. That's, you know, do your thing.
Well, no, so you're... Well, you said that you just kind of fell into... booking, right?
It's been taking off pretty quick too, and I'm excited. I'm tired all the time, and it's definitely running me ragged, but I definitely don't mind doing it because I do find it rewarding. So, you know, the Sly Bar open mics kind of opened doors for, you know, we did the USF show and then the Creative Loafing thing. So I can only hope that it's only going to get better, because I'd love to make some money that I don't have to work for. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Doing this show and doing, you know, booking and stuff like that. And in turn, you also get to help, you know, work at comics down here and everything. So, yeah, I'm hoping that that will, you know, only build on itself and continue to roll. So where did you, what was this pilot you worked on that, that didn't get picked up?
Oh, it was, we worked on it for like a month. It was called Schlub Life. I don't know if I should be, well.
Is there an opportunity for it to get picked up in the future?
No, I don't think so. I think it just gets kind of archived. And it's what's amazing to me is the amount of money that gets thrown into things that will never be seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a full scale production. We had all the stops were pulled, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars are poured into this, you know, this this pilot that will never get seen by anyone, which right. blows my mind. Like, the amount of money in the industry in general is absurd.
I think that's and I think people don't think about that too when they consider pirating too, because there's a lot of money to get spent on things that don't even get released.
Yeah.
I mean, there's movies that have been completed and millions of that are just, you know, shelved. Studio, you know, they have it, they could sell, but they're like, nah, we're just gonna, we're gonna keep it.
Yeah, or hold on to it. I mean, like Ben Stiller, I think, had a, had a movie, is it called Envy? It was, but it was released like 10 years later, down, which is, and that's Ben Stiller.
Right.
Like, if he's, if that's happening to him,
that's why he looked so young in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was 10 years old. It was a decade later, yeah.
Yeah, I believe it was, they made it 10 years beforehand, and then they just decided to.
He's kind of royalty, I guess. Now he can just buy his own, just be like, just, I'll buy it from you. Here's $100 million.
Right.
Here you go.
I am excited for Zoolander, too. I think it's going to be so funny.
You think so? I'm almost, I'm worried that it's too far out at this point. Because, like, did you see Dumb and Dumber 2?
No.
I tried. I really tried hard to watch that movie. I couldn't. I couldn't do it. And the original is one of my favorites.
Yeah. I don't know. The sequels are a hit or miss, really, with the... And you're bringing back... I mean, what was the storyline at that point? They're just the same.
The story, if I remember right, was that... Remember in the original where... I think it was Harry knocked up Freda Felcher? And... Or they were talking in the hot tub in the original, and they fought because, I guess, Harry and Lloyd both dated the same girl, Freda Felcher.
Okay, yeah.
So they found out that they had a child. So Harry was hunting down Freda to find his daughter. What's the deal?
Oh, okay.
I didn't watch. I don't know if he found her or not. I got through about 20 minutes of it.
Oh, like, you walked out?
I think I rented it on YouTube, actually. And I was just like, I'll just keep my money. I'm good. I don't want to see this.
Yeah, sometimes I wish they'd stop with certain, and that's with TV shows too. Like, stop when you're, go out with a bang.
Sure,
you know, don't,
sure.
Keep beating it.
But it's, you know, once something's a hit, you have to milk it for all it's worth, because it's making money. It's making those profit margins. This is the downside of capitalism. There's downsides. I don't know of a better system than what we have, but there are certainly downsides of capitalism. And one of them is that you do everything to make money. That is the motivator. And if it doesn't make money, then it won't get done. And there's a lot of stuff that doesn't get made that's really quality stuff just because it's not profitable. But I think, like, in this instance, as far as TV and film goes, that the internet's going to change that. Like, Netflix is dumping a lot of money into their own original series, and they're finding success with it. Like, House of Cards, I know Daredevil's doing well, which I'm going to watch that. I haven't watched it yet. They just signed Full House. They're going to do a reboot of that. And it's going to have, like, DJ, the original DJ Tanner and Stephanie. And I don't know if the... I don't think the Olsen twins would do it. But that's kind of cool. I mean, that's weird, too. That's another one of those things. That's a long time, and it's going to be weird watching that. But I'll probably watch it, you know, just because I loved that show growing up. And, you know, even if it stinks, whatever, it's on Netflix. You know, you don't have to sit through commercials. So, you know, why not?
I bet you I feel like a lot of people will tune in to that. Especially, I mean, even, like, Bob Saget, such a weird comedian, like, such a weird guy. But people still know him. These people haven't really dropped off the face of the earth. John Stamos, too, does Broadway. He was, like, in Cabaret and stuff. Like,
I don't know what happened to Dave Coulier. I know he did the squeaky clean comedy thing, but I don't know. I think he kind of just faded off in the distance. He probably still works, though. He must do some stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. I don't know what.
Wasn't he in a reality?
He did The Surreal Life.
On
VH1, I remember that. But that was probably 10 years ago, so I don't know what he's doing now. I mean, he does do stand-up. I'm pretty sure he still tours around doing that.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
And
he does completely clean stuff.
Which is difficult.
And I really respect people that can do that. Unfortunately, I don't find very much of it funny, because I'm a deviant, I think, for the most part, in my heart. So squeaky clean comedy is not very funny to me.
I'm trying to think of who... I mean... Ellen really, really pulls it off, but even hers isn't super clean. Well,
I wouldn't watch it. I remember watching it as a kid, though, and liking it. So I guess... I don't know. I remember Ellen did this bit where she talked about... like when you trip over your own feet and you pull it off and do the run, like you start to run, then you slow down. That still makes me laugh now. That's one of the bits that I remember even as a kid that I liked. But I can't remember anything else of hers.
She does the trying on jeans and looking in the mirror.
It's her movements, right? She does a lot of movements and...
Yeah.
Expressions. And so you couldn't listen to that and have it be funny. That's something you have to visually look at, too.
I guess that's true. I don't know. I like Ellen. I need to watch some of her stuff again.
But is she still doing stand-up, or is she...
I don't think so, no. But that was just that popped into my head, because I was trying to think of comics that actually have a pretty clean...
Brian Regan. I love Brian Regan. He's pretty clean.
I don't know.
Brian Regan is... You would know him if you saw him, I think. He's pretty big. I'll show him to you off air. But he's got some really good stuff. But yeah, that's about all I can think of, really. Who are your favorite comics?
First would be Sarah Silverman, hands down. I actually, when I was doing... wardrobe, like, assisting, I got to work with her in a music video, and it was unreal. It may not be a big deal to some people, but I've loved her since high school, and she ended up coming outside. I was outside taking a break, and she came outside, and she was with her friend, and she asked if I smoked. I was like, yep. And
I have this goo that my friends made. It's 90%.
This was before, that was before that even happened. But yeah, I took a hit of Sarah Silverman's joint, and I was thinking even at the time, no one's going to believe me that this happened, because all of my good friends know I'm a pretty big fan. So I did my best, though, to stay very calm and not fan out on her, because I was there for a job. But that was a really cool moment. I think she's so smart, and her delivery is really... I love the dry delivery, and she kind of pauses and waits for you to catch up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, and she the subject matter she tackles is... to make some of that funny, you know, I think I commend her for that. She's been ballsy since the beginning.
That's true.
I feel like.
Well, hey, I don't want to cut you off, but we gotta go already. I told you it blows by.
right.
And this cuts out on me after 45 minutes. So, Nora, thank you for coming on. Quickly tell us Twitter and all that stuff.
Oh, Twitter. I just got back on Twitter, and I'm at...
Quick.
At Nagatani Nora.
Okay, good. Thank you very much, Nora. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.